Welcome to We Can't Make This Stuff Up. It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin. And Ron, if the listener could only hear what we just did for the last 10 minutes.
How about the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, well, that's true.
The last 10 days. Yeah. All right. We were very tasteful on the issue of the day last time.
And we will be tasteful this week.
We will. Look, last week there was an open question. Was Anthony Weiner telling the truth to his wife, to his staff, to his friends, to the world about his late-night tweeting habits and the pictures that he was sending around to people all over, all of them apparently young women? No, he was not telling the truth. But as of the time we did the podcast last week, of course, there was still an open question. We doubted that his story added up, but we didn't know the full truth.
You know, everybody, you lie to your wife, you lie to your constituents, but you don't lie to Wolf Blitzer. And I think that's
he
crossed the line there.
I do believe that's true.
And not only is it just a line, first of all, he said, of course, his Twitter account was hacked. He blamed it on the vast right-wing conspiracy, which has worked for some people in the past. But there was still, you know, the questions. Once he said that I could not, with any certitude.
With any certitude. Isn't it great we have a new phrase in the language?
Used to be.
At that point in time.
What the meaning of is.
Oh, that point in time.
And speaking of what is, he apologized to Bill Clinton. Explain that to me.
Well,
I mean, yes, I know that his wife works for Hillary Clinton.
He doesn't want to give politicians a bad name.
And Bill Clinton officiated the marriage.
An odd note.
Mr. and Mrs. Weiner.
But at any rate, works for Hillary. It makes sense.
But the thought of apologizing to Bill Clinton about embarrassing your family.
Indeed, I did have a relationship with Ms. Lewinsky that was not appropriate.
But so not only did he admit sending out these tweets, but he also sent out more, it's apparently more and more graphic photos, more and more graphic language, the things that even I don't say in the privacy of my own home.
I understand. So as we go forward, what happens to Anthony Weiner?
Well, there are several possibilities here. First of all, more and more Democrats are coming out saying that he's got to go. Alison Schwartz, the congresswoman from Pennsylvania, who heads up the recruiting for the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, says he's got to resign.
Gotta go.
He's embarrassed us. Two former Democratic National Committee chairmen.
Tim Kaine
and Ed Rendell both said that he's got to resign. More and more members of the House are saying he has to resign. Look, he says he will not go.
And Nancy Pelosi has not called on him to resign. She has said they're going to initiate an ethics investigation.
Well, yeah, I don't know what that, look, what does that prove? I mean,
she's not in his corner.
Well,
she is
furious. Apparently she is furious.
Publicly, but you figure she's probably been on the telephone.
The argument that, well, I didn't break any law, that's a very weird argument to defend your whole honor with, especially one, as we said this before, he has been, in many people's minds, one of the most effective attackers of the Republican way of life on the House floor.
Oh, he's been on NPR's ear. He's been all over the media for years. He is a primary spokesman for the liberal Democratic cause. He is closely identified in many ways with the Democratic leadership, although he is not literally part of the Democratic leadership.
Well, I don't think they like him. I think they like his passion.
That's right. And they like the fact that he is, you know, he's a spearhead. He's a projectile. He's the kind of person who can lead the charge. And they oftentimes need that. It doesn't mean that they like him personally. But, of course, the fact that they may not really like him that much personally makes it that much easier to throw him under the bus.
And one way, possible way of throwing him under the bus is, as we've said this before, that, you know, New York loses two congressional districts in the 2012 redistricting battle.
Isn't that convenient?
Well, that could be the way to do it. I mean, the thought has always been that because the Republicans do have a say in New York because they control the state Senate, so they have a say in redistricting, the feeling is the Democrats would probably lose somebody in New York City, a seat in New York City, and the Republicans would lose a member upstate New York. Now, of course, Kathy Hochul just ruined that for the
took away that seat.
Took away that, so there's going to have to be another seat. But
and there aren't that many Republican seats to put on the block at this point.
No. They picked up three or four in 2010.
And those are the ones they would have to put on the block because they were down to one or two before they picked those up.
Exactly. But so either they redraw. Now, this used to be, I mean, this was, to go back, this was Charles Schumer's district. This was Elizabeth Holzman's district.
In Brooklyn, yes.
In Brooklyn. This was Emanuel Sellers' district.
You know, that really brings a tear of nostalgia.
Well, I used to work in May Sellers' law firm. But he was, had he survived the primary, this is very important for the listener, but had Emanuel Sellers survived his primary with Liz Holzman in 1972, he, not Peter Rodino, would have been the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee during
Watergate.
For the
impeachment in 1974.
That's right, Emanuel Sellers.
So will he resign?
Well, I think Manny Sellers should stay in Congress. No, Manny Sellers served from 1923 to 1972. Nobody talks about that anymore. Why?
They really don't. Now, On the other hand, we could talk about something that's happening in our century, and that would be Anthony Weiner's impending resignation or no? Well, does he try to tough it out?
The Democrats I've spoken to say there's no reason why he has to resign. They say, look, Barney...
No legal reason.
Well, no, forget about even that.
Not even an institutional reason.
Barney Frank, you know, was embarrassed in 1989 with the Stephen... No, I know. Let me just finish. With the Stephen Gobe scandal, the Boston Globe said Barney Frank has embarrassed himself. He's no longer effective. He should resign.
Well, and how many years was he chairman of...
And Jerry Stutz, too, with the sex scandal with underage male... congressional pages, they said, no, he's got to go, and he said no.
And I don't want to take this into a technological direction here, but the difference is those incidents happened before the internet.
That's a good point, and that's exactly what I was
saying. And the humiliation of Barney Frank and Jerry Studs was largely confined to the newspapers of the area that they served.
It was 24...
It was
24-7 cable.
Yeah, there was CNN, but CNN didn't hit it as hard as they hit stories now. And the internet drives everything. And so because we can all click, 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 and see more than we need or want to see about the private elements of this particular controversy, there's no way that it's going to be expunged ever. And it is different even from some of these other scandals we've had lately, like the John Ensign scandal, the John Edwards scandal. We are not
Mark Sanford.
We are not having, you know, the obscenity of the thing thrust in our face quite the same way in those other scandals.
I agree.
Therefore,
completely.
I think he is in a special category of humiliation.
Right. I think that's absolutely right. When Anthony Weiner did have that surreal press conference on Monday, did think of Mark Sanford in the fact that he went on and answered questions that
there was... And cried.
And why was there no press person saying, okay, bye, get out of here, okay, see you, bye. I mean, when I heard Anthony Weiner give his statement...
I've exchanged messages and photos of an explicit nature with about 6 women over the last 3 years.
And I sat there with such incredulity, and then he says...
I'd be glad to take any questions that you might have.
My goodness!
My God! Well, exactly. It was like Sanford in slow motion horror. And Mark Sanford's an interesting kind of conflict and comparison kind of situation. We've had so many of these lately. Arnold Schwarzenegger, I mean, we can't even keep an accurate catalog.
They're not all the same, because look,
no,
Sanford was
in love. Of course
they're
not all the same, but in another way they are.
Yeah.
Because in every case, what you have is the bringing low, if you will, of someone who had previously been a very proud, rising, and in some sense or another, impending political larger figure, you know, an ascendant figure. And in every one of these cases, that person has been brought low by sexual deceit. Is this not true? I mean, whatever else you want to say about all these cases, sexual deceit is at the heart of what has brought them down.
Now, some people have realized the embarrassment was too great to overcome and have left immediately. Chris Lee, with the shirt off and Craigslist, left within hours. Elliot Spitzer, frequenting prostitutes.
He even battled a little bit.
He thought a day or two
he might survive it, but then he resigned as governor.
Well, especially after the fact that he prosecuted people who were involved in the prostitution business. So he saw that. And, you know,
Hypocrisy and contradiction.
McGreevy. Jim McGreevy, the governor of New Jersey, in this gay affair that whatever.
But
that
it was the deceit. It was lying to everybody about it. And that is the common element in all of these things that I think makes it very difficult for someone to go on to ask people to trust them as a politician.
And there's a new wrinkle as well. Not only is the fact that more and more photos are coming out and more the ick factor is certainly growing with Anthony Weiner, but the fact that his wife has been announced that she's pregnant, if he was doing this while his wife was pregnant, that even makes it more icky. Don't you think? I mean...
I do, but I will also say that her pregnancy is going to cast a slightly contrasting light on this whole situation. Sympathy for her rises, of course.
Absolutely.
No sympathy for him.
No.
But therefore, if she stays and stands by him, then it brings a little bit more sympathy into their common situation, their joint situation. I think it puts more pressure on him to resign.
I do too.
Get into private life. He'll make a lot of money. He'll be, in some sense or another, redeemed or not.
Look at Elliot Spitzer right now on CNN.
Okay, you can ask whether or not he's redeemed himself on CNN. But yeah, I mean, guys come back. Newt Gingrich, he's back. He's running for president. We've seen people come back, as you said, Barney Frank, Jerry Studs in Congress. Right. So he has a chance, but the first thing he has to do is get off the stage for a while if he wants to be redeemed and not just go on being humiliated further and further. If he does that, I suspect his wife's pregnancy does merely add to the indictment and weigh upon him.
One thing to her credit, she did not appear at the news conference, and I think that's a very good sign. Another good thing for...
Bad sign for Wiener, if that means that she's basically out the door, baby.
Well, she's also now traveling with Secretary of State Clinton around the world. But
I wonder
also,
if they've had any conversations.
The two of them, what they can share in common. Yes, exactly. But also the fact is the House has been out this week. You know that when Congress comes back next week, the cameras, they'll be following anywhere.
It'll all be forgotten next week. Talk about the debt ceiling.
Given the fact that he says so many frank things now that he's been caught, I mean, who knows what he's going to say with more and more pictures coming out. So it could be a circus, and that's exactly what Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats do not want.
You know, back when they were voting on Barney Frank, and the question was just how much of a humiliation he was going to be put through, there was some discussion of whether or not Mr. Frank might, shall we say, share some of the information he had about some of his fellow members of Congress.
Right.
And I wonder if there has been any talk of that kind, of Anthony Weiner saying, look, you know, there are a couple of people around here who might have a bit of exposure on the hypocrisy front.
If memory serves, I think Frank talked about that during the Clinton thing, not during his own scandal. I think he did it during Clinton. If you're going to go after Bill Clinton, I'll go after your peccadilloes. I think Frank said that well after his own scandal.
And I trust you will never go after my peccadilloes. So we will just have to close the book for the moment on Anthony Weiner. We do want to mention that this has tended to cover over another story that otherwise would have gotten even more attention than it has, John Edwards' indictment.
How happy is John Edwards for the Anthony Weiner scandal?
Well, I think he's grateful for it. Happy is probably going a little far.
True.
John Edwards' situation is going to go on now for many months. We don't know how long it'll take to get to trial. But when it does get to trial, if it does get to trial, and I still think it would make sense for him to reach some sort of settlement with the U.S. government if he can, but if it comes to trial, the case against him is troubled in that there are not clear precedents for prosecuting somebody for this kind of misuse of campaign funds. We haven't seen a lot of cases like this. Usually these kinds of things are handled by the FEC.
No, and as his attorney Greg Craig said, it's a stupid thing he did, but they've never prosecuted something like this.
No, and now this is an egregious case, and we're talking about very large amounts of money.
Hundreds of
thousands of dollars from one individual.
Right, Bunny
and
Allen.
Clearly somebody who was going to have a politician very much in her debt if he remained a politician, if they were successful in suppressing this whole story, and he had actually become president of the United States. That's exactly what the campaign finance laws are supposed to be protecting us from. One person owning a particular political figure by giving them secret contributions. I don't think there's a whole lot of question in the average person's mind that what Bunny Mellon was trying to do here was help John Edwards escape from a political embarrassment. So the case may not have clear legal precedents, but I can imagine a jury understanding exactly what was going on in the mind of the prosecutor and understanding exactly what was going on in the mind of John Edwards.
Going back to your earlier point is something I thought of as well. Why not cop a plea? If the worst thing is that you lose your law license, why not do it? But as it turned out, the negotiations with the government included jail time. And John Edwards said, I did not want to go to prison because I did not want to hurt my family. And you know John Edwards would never do anything to hurt his family.
That's right. Well, let's put it this way. It's also entirely possible that if the jail time was part of the sentence, it could have been a suspended sentence. You would have had to have trusted a judge to be in the spirit of the negotiation. But I doubt very much that anybody really expected, after suspending his law license and fining him and making him plead guilty to a felony, that somebody really wanted to see him wear a number and go to Brushy Mountain State Prison or something like that.
You know what's remarkable about this? About 2 weeks ago, when the Democrats won New York 26, when there was a backlash to Paul Ryan's Medicare overhaul plan, the Democrats seemed to be on the ascendancy. They seemed to be on a roll. They're saying, this is really great news. You know, we're going to take back the House in 2012. New York 26 proves it. The American people have lost faith in the Republicans completely. And now, so you have the whole week of Anthony Weiner. You have a bunch of days of John Edwards. You also have bad economic news that came out of the May employment figures that does not look good for President Obama in 2012.
I think when you talk about that third thing, you've hit upon the most important change that we've seen in the last couple of weeks. Yes, the sex scandals have transferred over from Arnold Schwarzenegger and John Ensign on the Republican side to John Edwards and now Anthony Weiner on the Democratic side. We have learned again that the one most bipartisan thing about American politics, perhaps the only truly bipartisan thing about American politics, is sex scandals. What will last and what will affect voting when voting gets started again is things like putting an end to Medicare as we know it, or the economy. And the deterioration of the economic indicators in the last couple of weeks has been pretty serious. We've seen the jobless rate tick back upward. Everybody, I think most people at least, were hoping it would come back downward.
It went from 9% to 9.1%.
A huge change, but the wrong direction.
And they also created only 54,000 jobs, and everybody expected
that was disturbing.
Many times that number.
That's right. And this week, the early indicators are that jobless claims are not going down, ticked up slightly. And so the whole political thrust, the whole issue thrust on the economy that has been the Obama message, we are getting better. It's going very slowly, but we are moving in the right direction. Even that is in question. That has brought the president down from his Osama bin Laden assassinated, or whatever we want to call it, the death of Osama bin Laden bounce, is gone. And it's because these economic indicators are so poor.
Right. Killing Osama bin Laden didn't change my economic future, your economic future, the country's economic future, didn't result in an increase of jobs. So ultimately, we knew from the beginning that that bump was not going to last that long. But here's the question. I see all the polls and everybody says that, you know, the May numbers are really, really treacherous for the president and shows it could be in serious trouble for 2012. But the April numbers were pretty encouraging. There were more jobs created. There was some interest, you know, a little movement on the unemployment rate, favorable unemployment numbers. So if there was kind of good news in April, it's terrible news in May. Aren't we, like, reacting too quickly to this month by month by month, you know, the sky is falling? Because June could be good numbers for all we know.
All trends are overdrawn, and every time we see something that we think might be the beginning of something big, we act as though it were already something big. That's our nature as journalists, I suspect, and podcasters are no better. I do think that there is a serious question mark about the Obama recovery, and that is, best I can tell, the biggest question mark overhanging his second term prospects. If you look at the Republican field, there have been lots of polls out showing Republicans are dissatisfied with it. And I realize, obviously, you know, they don't know them all very well yet. They may fall in love with John Huntsman. They may fall in love with Michelle Bachmann. But as of now, there is no one who is clearly a dominant figure, even to the degree that John McCain was 4 years ago, or certainly not to the degree that George W. Bush was in 1999.
John McCain was not...
He was a clear favorite, but he had a very rocky summer, very rocky summer 4 years ago
time,
and almost blew it.
Staff, message, money.
It all went wrong for him, but he still had a good enough standing in the most important part of the party that he was trying to appeal to, that he held it together, that he came back from losing Iowa, that he won New Hampshire, and that from then on, he pretty much went without a scuff. He really took
it January easily. 2008, not Absolutely. June of 2007.
That's right. He
and
had
now
a rocky
we're in June of 2011.
Yes, but he was still in better shape 4 years ago than anybody else
That's
is
fair.
Now,
including
Mitt Romney, who has begun to establish himself as the clear frontrunner. Now, I've been saying Mitt Romney's a default candidate. Maybe he's better than a default candidate. Maybe at this point he's consolidating his support. He's raising money. He announced his candidacy right as all these bad economic numbers were coming out. That was good timing. He survived Sarah Palin's best attempt to marginalize him. I mean, sure, some of the newspapers in New Hampshire paid more attention to her than to his announcement.
But that makes sense because that was on a surprise announcement.
That's correct. And also because, you know, she makes a better front page photograph. That happened. Then Sarah Palin disappeared again. We've just seen a raft of polls showing that over 60% of the country has decided there's no way they're going to vote for her. Even Republicans don't want her to run for president. I don't think she's a realistic prospect. I don't think she's going to get in the race. So that's good for Romney.
The only people who are voting for her are the British, who Paul Revere warned.
Well, they were warned.
What was that all about?
He who warned the British that they weren't going to be taking away our arms by ringing those bells and making sure as he's riding his horse through town to send those warning shots and bells.
I hate comparing Michelle Bachmann to Sarah Palin.
But it's inevitable.
Right, it is. And when Michelle Bachmann made a mistake, as she did with Lexington and Concord, she said, I goofed. It was a mistake. I'm embarrassed. Fine. End of story. Sarah Palin will put you on the defensive. How dare you ask me a gotcha question? You're out to get me. This was not my fault. This was your fault.
Well, nobody asked her about Paul Revere. She brought it up.
Exactly.
And plus, the difference is Michelle Bachmann's fans don't go in and start trying to change the Wikipedia story of Paul Revere. Now, that, I think, goes to the heart of what's going on with Sarah Palin and some of her admirers. They really want to have things be the way they want them to be, even if it means going back and airbrushing history.
That's why I stopped looking at a Wikipedia for my research. Also, I can't believe I'm quoting polls, June 2011, but the Washington Post poll also shows among all registered voters, I can't believe I'm quoting this, Mitt Romney.
3 points up.
3 points over President Obama. It's a ludicrous number, but the fact is he is recovering or at least benefiting from these doubts about President Obama. And we could talk about all, you know, how Ronald Reagan was a right-wing extremist who couldn't win in 1980. Bill Clinton had character flaws who couldn't win in 1992. But ultimately, it was determined that the economy was bad and the incumbent was at fault in 1980 and 1992, and that could be the same thing. We do see the specter of a debate on Monday in New Hampshire, sponsored by CNN and the New Hampshire union leader, and we're going to see Mitt Romney and Newt Gingrich and Michelle Bachmann for the first time on the stage together.
And I think I'm going to just predict this. There's going to be a bit of a dogpile on Mr. Romney because he is breaking from the pack in the last couple of weeks in all these polls, particularly the ones that show him the only one running even or ahead of Barack Obama.
Competitively, right.
Yes, and that's huge. Plus the fact that he has built this plausible case. He has this money. His campaign, obviously he has issue things he has to work out. His biggest problem is with Republicans, and he does need to get the nomination. He does need to decide to win some of these events. But if he wins New Hampshire, and he does well, relatively speaking, even if he doesn't carry South Carolina, then he can go off into the big states and into Super Tuesday and be the plausible alternative. He is building a real path to a nomination into the presidency. Don't see that happening from any of the other candidates. They're going to dogpile on him on Monday night.
I agree. The news of the other candidates this week, Tim Pawlenty had his economic plan, talking about 5% growth.
Thank God, we're finally going back to 5% growth.
$2 trillion in cuts in taxes.
That's great.
Several more times that cuts in spending.
Why not 6%? Why not 10% growth, Tim? Yeah, why not believe in America?
What is it now? 1.8% is what the...
I think we're at 1.9, actually. I last saw. Look, the Tim Pawlenty economic plan, which does not give any solutions to any of the big problems that everybody else who's trying to deal with this thing seriously, he says, well, we got to do something about Medicare. Well, are you going to change the program the way Paul Ryan wants to change it? No, I don't want to do that. But we'll make big savings, but we'll do it a different way. Well, now, how are you going to do it? Well, I haven't decided yet. I'll tell you that later.
And while he seemed to be obviously making a pitch for conservative support by coming up with this very radical, is probably a good word I could think of for this plan, when Mitt Romney said, well, you know, maybe man is responsible for climate change. Well, Rush Limbaugh said, well, there goes the nomination. You can kiss that nomination goodbye. So, I mean, but at least for Mitt Romney, at least he's not making the mistake that he did in 2008, reversing previous positions. I still don't know if he can recover from Romney care, but at least he's trying to be more consistent. The other news of the week is that Michelle Bachmann hiring Ed Rollins.
Very interesting, because it shows that, number one, she's trying to tap into the kind of energy that, say, Ross Perot did. Ross Perot was one of the people that Ed Rollins has worked for over the years. And Ed Rollins gives you somebody who can immediately get attention from the media and say...
For better or for worse.
All right, there's going to be a downside to it. Anything that a candidate in Michelle Bachmann's position does right now is going to have an upside and a downside. By the way, Tim Pawlenty has brought on as his South Carolina chairman Joe Uli Wilson, the guy who shouted out Uli at President Obama in the middle of a speech to Congress. I mean, there's an upside and a downside to that, too, if you're Tim Pawlenty. But all these other candidates, other than Mitt Romney, they're not running for president of the United States right now. They're running for president of the Tea Party. They're trying to get that energy. And I think Michelle Bachmann has a real claim to it, for starters, as chairman of the Tea Party in the House. And then she's trying to broaden that out to a somewhat different kind of populist energy through Ed Rollins.
And yeah, and she's born in Waterloo, Iowa, and that gives a big plus for the Iowa caucuses. But Ed Rollins has always been about Ed Rollins. He says things that are controversial. He often trashes his own candidates, sometimes publicly, sometimes privately. But you know,
always privately and sometimes publicly.
Well, with Christy Whitman and Michael Huffington, and I mean, yes, he did run Mike Huckabee's effort in 2008, and Mike Huckabee did win the Iowa caucuses and finished second in the battle for the nomination. But for the most part, I think Rollins is his own worst enemy, and he's just often made comments that have come back to bite him. He already said that Sarah Palin's, you know, is lazy, the best days are behind her, she's not doing
she's
any
not
work.
She's not serious.
She's not serious. Yeah. And, you know, that may all be true, but you don't do that if the focus is supposed to be on the candidate, not on the campaign manager. Ed Rollins, I don't think, has ever learned that lesson.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week, because we can't make this stuff up, and it's all politics from NPR.